Okay, so we are. Where are we? We're in the Miller's Tale, I believe. I believe yesterday we were looking at the words between the host and the miller, and
yeah, let me start. Oh yeah.
Okay, good. So let's pick up there. Yeah, we're still, we're on page 87 or thereabouts.
Maybe.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, we're talking about that word cuckold?
Yeah.
And this whole idea of being cuckolded is just a source of endless concern, worry, and endless humor in English literature. And usually those two things go together. Anyone watch Jon Stewart, I guess the night before last, talking about the swine flu? You know, things that people worried about, like, oh my God, pandemic of swine flu is like maybe going to kill hundreds of millions of people, by the way, in case you hadn't heard. And so naturally, that's Jon Stewart's number one topic of just totally hilarious humor. People laugh about the stuff they're worried about. Freud said that. Freud said, always pay attention to jokes. Because jokes reveal what people's real anxieties are. So, page 87 at the bottom, Miller saying, this is the last paragraph on 87. To this, the drunken Miller then replied, my dear old brother Oswald, such is life. A man's no cuckold if he has no wife. That's funny. That's a joke. Yeah, no problem making sure your wife doesn't run around on you. Don't have a wife. Implication being, bless you, implication being, I'm sorry? Yeah, there's a more general implication here for everyone. What is this implying? If you have a wife, she may well be cheating on you. And he goes, but then he goes on, and see, this is where Chaucer is so, his ear for realistic dialogue actually is very similar to Salinger's in a funny way. He really kind of gets a sense of how people can sort of go off on things. For all that, I'm not saying you are one. In other words, I'm not saying you're a cuckold. There's many virtuous wives, all said and done. Ever a thousand good for one that's bad, as well you know yourself, unless you're bad. Why are you angry? What is this to do? I have a wife, God knows, as well as you. Yet not for all the oxen in my plow would I engage to take it on me now to think myself a cuckold, just because, and notice the ellipsis points there, just because, we could almost see him stroking his chin, just because what? Gee, just because my wife wasn't home that time I came home early? Just because my last two kids don't look like me? Just because I'm pretty sure I'm not, and never was. And one shouldn't be too inquisitive in life, either about God's secrets or one's wife. You'll find God's plenty all you could desire. Of the remainder, better not inquire. This is very funny, and at the same time, can you see kind of profound stuff coming out of the mill all of a sudden? God's plenty. What does that mean? You'll find God's plenty, all you could desire. Forget about wives and cuckolds and so forth for a moment. Just in a general sense. You'll find God's plenty, all you could desire. What kind of philosophy of life is that? Yeah, exactly. It's a philosophy of abundance. It's real different from, let's say, the philosophy that's summed up nothing to be done, or tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, blah, 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 and all our yesterdays of light and fools the way the dust you get. It's real different, isn't it? It's like, wow, look around. Look at the world. It's just God's plenty. It's like, the horn of plenty, the cornucopia that you always see in Thanksgiving decorations. But that's what life is like. And this is basically Chaucer's sunny, optimistic, you know, springtime kind of philosophy that he pours on everything. You'll find God's plenty, all you can desire. Of the remainder, better not inquire. You know, don't ask too many questions. Don't look at stuff too closely. You know, what did Teddy write in his journal? Life is a gift horse, in my opinion. Can you see it's the same sort of philosophy? Let's have someone else read on here. Tierney, can you read on? A churl means like a, you know, a boor, a lewd person.
And I regret I must repeat it here. And so I beg of all who are refined for God's love not to think me ill-inclined or evil in my purpose. I rehearse their tales as told, for better or for worse, or else it should be false to what occurred. So if this tale had better not be heard, just turn the page and choose another sort. Find them here in plenty, long and short. Many hysterical that will profess morality, good breeding, saintness. Do not blame me if you should choose amiss. The miller was a churl. I have told you this. So was the reeve, and other son as well. And poetry was all they had to tell. Consider them, and hold me free of blame, and why be serious about a game.
Now, you see what Chaucer's doing here?
Apologizing in advance.
Apologizing in advance. Hey, I'm really sorry that I have to tell you this dirty story, this story that's full of harlotry, right? You know, whorishness. But, gee, God, I'm just the reporter here. Now,
don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah, exactly. Don't shoot the messenger. Now, is this really the situation? Is he really the messenger that's just obliged to report on what he's heard, take it down like a stenographer? No, he's making this stuff up. He's making up this whole trip to Canterbury. He's making up all these characters. I mean, in a sense, he's reporting on what his culture is like. There were people like the miller who told stories like this. But this whole idea of, oh, I really regret that I have to tell you this dirty story now, is really a joke. And, of course, everyone reading this and hearing this would know that it's a joke. We're all in on the joke. This gives us all permission to laugh at dirty stuff that otherwise we say, wait a minute, we're upper class folk. We're not supposed to indulge. And notice it's the low class folk, just like in Shakespeare. Where does the humor come from? The workers, the low class folk. Yes?
Is it known that any of the specific characters was to represent Chaucer?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the pilgrims is Chaucer himself.
Oh, really?
The eye. The eye that we hear, and in fact, if you look in if you look in the table of contents, yes, you'll see. Yeah, you'll see. Chaucer has tales, two tales. So Chaucer makes himself one of the characters in the pilgrimage. So this is very clever, giving himself permission to tell these dirty stories. And giving us permission to enjoy them. And then, actually, it's pretty funny where he says, hey, look, there's all kinds of stories here, virtuous stories. If you choose the dirty ones, don't blame me. It's, you know, that's your choice. Okay, let's go on. Matt, could you read this?
Some time ago, there was a rich old codger.
Codger, that means like, you know, an old fogey.
Who lived in Oxford and who took a lodger. The fellow was a carpenter by trade. Lodger, a poor student who made some studies in the arts, but all his fancy turned to astrology and geomancy.
Yeah, geomancy means forecasting the future.
And he could deal with certain propositions and make a forecast under some conditions about the likelihood of drought or showers for those who asked at favorable hours, or put a question how their luck would fall in this or that. I can't describe them all. The side was known as Nicholas the Gallant.
Okay. Now, yeah, this sounds like rap, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know? Dean Lowell Slider is my name. Teaching English is my game. And flunking sophomores is my fame. You know, whatever. Sorry.
Oh, it sounds like the Fresh Prince.
Yeah. Okay.
For he was very close and sly and took advantage of his meek and girlish look.
Interesting, by the way.
Why is that attractive?
Huh?
Meek and girlish.
Why is that attractive? Well, as a matter of fact, some guys get over on girls by being tough and macho. And there are guys who get over on girls by being very shy and a little bit feminine, and they you get to be close to them that way. It works for some guys. You'll find out about these things.
He rented a small chamber in the kip all by himself without companionship. He decked it charmingly with herbs and fruit, and he himself was sweeter than the root of the birch or any fragrant herb.
Okay, so et cetera, and we get the whole, you know, as you read this the other night, we get the whole, his apartment with all the herbs hanging from it, and the all his, and he plays the harp, and he sings this song and that song. So notice how Chaucer is appealing to all the senses, how he looks, how sweet he smells, how his voice sounds when he's singing these different songs, bringing in all the senses. Now, no one had done this before, at least not in English. And very few people have done it since, to create such vivid characters that we see, hear, smell, taste, touch, with all our senses. Obviously, there was no photography or movies at the time. Imagine how amazing it was to people to like, wow, I'm experiencing this person. He's like, he's there in the room. He's three-dimensional. It's like, you know, holographic. Let's skip down to the next paragraph.
A girl of 18 years of age. Jealous he was and kept her in the cage, for he was old and she was wild and young. He found himself quite lucky to be stung.
And stung, of course, here means cuckolded. Now let's see. Here's this rich old fogey of a carpenter that's very jealous. He's got this wild young 18-year-old hot babe of a wife, and this sly student who's living in his house. What could possibly happen here? This is like the setup. It's like the first 5 minutes of a sitcom, isn't it? What could possibly go wrong? Let's skip to the next page and see the vivid three-dimensional holographic description of the babe.
She was a fair young wife, her body as slender as any weasel's. Used to wear a girdle of striped silk.
Girdle in those days, by the way, means belt. No, just a belt. Just a belt.
Her apron was as wide as morning milk over her loins, all
gussied
and pleated. White was her smock, embroidery repeated its pattern on the collar, front and back, inside and out. It was of silk and black.
Now, you see how detailed that is? We even see the embroidery on her collar, not only on the outside, but on the inside of the collar.
The tapes and ribbons of her milky mush were made to match her collar to her touch. She wore a broad silk fillet, rather high, and certainly she had a lecherous eye.
What does lecherous mean? Sexy. She's got bedroom eyes.
And she had plucked her eyebrows in two bows, slenderly arched they were, and black as rose. And a more truly blissful sight to see, she was then of a cherry tree, and softer than the wool upon a leather. And by her girdle hung a purse of leather, tasseled with silk and silver droplets of milk. If you went seeking up and down the world, a waxman you met would have to wrench his fancy to imagine such a wrench. And her complexion had a brighter tint than any florin from the world.
So a florin was a copper coin, it was like a big copper penny, I believe. So that really, it makes you see her complexion, doesn't it? Shining like a new, bright penny.
Is a wench like an offensive term?
It's not offensive. It's not offensive.
I thought it was.
I mean, you know, words take on different connotations over the years. I know people use it a little more pejoratively now. It was not pejorative then. It is certainly emphasizing the woman as a sexual being. It doesn't mean a slut, but it does mean it. You wouldn't use it if you're meeting the queen. You wouldn't say, "Ah, so good to meet you, my wench."
Mm-hmm.
As to her song, it was as loud and quick as any swells chirping on the roof, and she would skip or play some game or other like any kind, any kid or calf behind his mouth. Her mouth was sweet as a mead or honey, say a hoard of apples lying in the head.
Okay, now, this is really good stuff. Anyone know what mead is? Yeah, it is an alcoholic drink. It's like, if you've ever had mulled cider, it's sort of like that, but made from beer. It's a hot drink. The basis of it is beer, and then it's got honey and like cinnamon and spices in it. So her mouth was sweet as mead or honey. Say a hoard of apples lying in the hay. Now, we usually give apples, you know, they're cold, they're refrigerated, they're, you know, in the produce section of the supermarket. How many of you have ever been around apples ripening on the tree on a hot July day? You know that aroma? It's a completely different, the sweetness of it. How many of you know the smell of fresh hay in a barn? Okay, so put that together with those apples, and this is what her mouth tasted like. This is what, so we're not only getting her slender weasel. We're not only getting her slender weasel-like waist and her embroidery and her skipping along behind, you know, like a calf behind its mother and her bright, but we even know what her kisses taste like. I mean, this is very vivid. I'm sorry? You have.
Yeah,
what? Go ahead.
I mean, I know. Oh, okay, never mind. How would the miller. Is he just making up this story? I mean, that's just.
Yeah, it's storytelling.
Yeah, the miller is.
I thought they were like true story. I mean, like the miller experience or something.
No. This is Chaucer making up the miller, making up the story with all these characters. This is fiction. This is fiction within fiction.
All the stories are fiction.
All the stories are fiction, yes.
She was,
but you know what's great that you asked this question is that it's so convincing, it's so realistic, it's so three-dimensional, we feel like we're seeing a documentary film or something.
Skittish she was and jolly as a colt, tall as a mast, and upright as a bolt out of a gun. Her collarette revealed a brooch as big as balls upon a shield. High shoes she wore and laced them up to the top. She was a daisy, oh, a lollipop, for any noble man to take too bad, or some good man of the
yeoman.
Yeoman
stopped too bad. Yeah, she's a lollipop. Now, gentlemen, this gallant Nicholas one day began to romp and make a pass at this young woman in the mood of play, her husband being out down Osney way. Students are sly, and giving way to whim, he made a grab and caught her by the quim. Quim is an Anglo-Saxon term not used anymore. I believe this refers to her crotch area. And said, unless I have my will of you, I'll die of secret love. Oh, darling, do. Then held her by the haunches. So he's got his hands on her butt. Held her by the haunches hard and gave a cry. Oh, love me all at once or I shall die. She gave a spring, just like a skittish colt boxed in a frame for sure. Have any horsey people here? Okay. You know what this looks like? When you've got it in the box for shoeing, it's like in this frame so it can't move, but it can kind of flinch like that.
Yeah.
Isn't that a great image for what he's, because he's got her boxed in with his arms holding, but she flinches like that? That's great. Managed in time to wrench her head away and said, give over, Nicholas, I say. No, I won't kiss you. Stop it. Let me go or I shall scream. I'll let the neighbors know. Where are your manners? Take away your paws. So what happens eventually?
She gives in.
She gives in and she says, okay, we'll have our night of love, but we've got to have some way of getting rid of my husband out of the way. What does he do? What becomes his plan for getting rid of the husband? Remember, the student's specialty is astrology and geomancy and predicting the weather of the future. So yeah, Noel's flood, meaning Noah's flood, is going to come again. Get three kneading tubs, right? Tie them into the rafters so that when the water comes up, we'll just cut the ropes and float away while everybody else grabs. Yeah, I believe that. I'm sorry? Brilliant, brilliant. Okay. Now we get introduced to a fourth character, Absalom. What is this guy like?
He's like a nerd.
He is a nerd. Page 92. Page 92, 1, 2, 3, fourth line down. There was a parish clerk. Now, it's spelled like clerk, but pronounced Clark. Notice it rhymes with Mark. Clark, man, it was sort of like a deacon in the church, someone he's not a priest, but he would help out in the church. Let's have someone else read here. Chloe, could read this. Okay, so et cetera, and you can, let's go down to about two-thirds of the way down the page. He played
a two-string fiddle, did a crab, he sang a high falsetto rather loud, and he was just as good on the guitar. There was no public house in town or bar. He didn't visit with his merry face. There was saucy parties around the place.
Now, public house... Nowadays, we shorten that to pub. It means a bar, a tavern. In case you wondered where the word pub comes from, originally it was public house. It was like a house where anyone could go and play.
He was a little squeamish in the matter of farting, satirical.
Now that's kind of an odd detail. Squeamish, you know, like anytime someone passes gas, it's like, oh, he really has a hard time with it. Seems like a weird detail, but... Of course, this pays off later in the story.
This Absalom, so jolly in his ways, would bear the censer around on holidays. And censor the parish women.
Okay, what is the censor with an ER ending? It's an incense burner. If you're a Catholic or an Episcopalian, you've seen this in church. It's like the bowl, a brass bowl at the end of some chains with the incense smoke and what?
What? Oh, I just said smoke.
Yeah, and they walk up the aisle swinging this thing, sensing the people. In other words, they're coating them with the incense smoke to bless them. Now, this is kind of funny. Actually, go ahead, please.
He would pass many a loved one before he passed, especially his carpenter's young wife. Looking at her would make a happy life. She was amazing, so sweet, so lecherous. And I dare say, if she had been a mouse and he her cat, she'd have been.
Now, see, the historians give you the official story. The poets, the storytellers give you the real story. So the official story, the way people think of the Middle Ages, Middle Ages totally dominated by the church, everyone was so pious. But the real story is that people are people. Things don't change much between the 14th century and the 21st century. So yeah, people are in church, but here's the guy... He's the deacon, the clerk, and as he's burning the incense for people, he's checking out the babes and doing a little extra shake, you know, in front of the good looking ones, and just there pining away for Allison here, the carpenter's wife. You know, people are people; things don't change. So let's skip ahead. Let's go to 102.
Why do they call him Nicolay
It's like. Call someone Susan or Sue or Susie. It makes it easier to rhyme. So, we got the situation, right? The carpenter is up there in the rafters, sleeping away in his tub, waiting for Noel's flood. Allison and Nicolay are having their night of wild passion. Absalom decides he's going to get up in the middle of the night, in the wee hours, and go over to Allison's house and try to make a move on her. I'm sorry? Yeah. So 102 at the top. We're going to have the first cock crow. That means the first rooster. Brandon, could you read, please?
From the top.
Yeah.
The first cock crew at last, and thereupon crows this jolly lover Absalom. In gayest clothes garnished with that and this, but first he chewed a grain of licorice. To charm his breath before he combed his hair.
Yes, he's going out on this big date, so he's got to use his breath freshener, which in those days would be chewing licorice.
Under his tongue, the comfit nestling there would make him gracious. He began to roam toward the carpenters. He reached their home and by the casement window took his stand. Breast high it stood, no higher than his hand. He gave a cough, it was semi-sound.
Like that.
Allison, honeycomb, are you around? Sweet cinnamon, my little pretty bird. Sweetheart, wake up and say a little word.
This guy is a nerd, you're right. I mean, the way he talks to her, you just want to sock him, don't you?
You seldom think of me in all my woe. I sweat for love of you whenever I go, but wherever I go. No wonder if I do, I pine and bleat, as any lamb can hungering for the teat.
And of course, that means any baby lamb hungering for its mother's breast. Obviously, he's hungering for her breast.
Believe me, darling, I'm so deep in love, I croon with longing like a turtle dove. I eat as little as a girl at school.
You go away, she answered. You tomfool. There's no come up and kiss me here for you. I love another. And why shouldn't I, too? Better than you, by Jesus, Absalom. Take yourself off, or I shall throw a stone. I want to get some sleep. You go to hell.
Alas, said Absalom. I knew it well. True love is always mocked and girded at. So kiss me, if you can't do more than that. For Jesus...
Jesus.
Jesus' love, and for the love of me.
And if I do, will you be off, said she?
Promise you, darling, answered Absalom.
Get ready, then. Wait, I'll put something on, she said. And then she added under breath to Nicholas, yes, we shall laugh to death.
This Absalom went down upon his knees. I am Lord, he thought, and by degrees there may be more to come. The plot may thicken. Mercy, my love, he said. Your mouth, my chicken.
Her mouth, my chicken. She flung the window open then in haste and said, have done, come on, no time to waste. The neighbors here are always on the spy. Absalom started wiping his mouth dry. And now here comes the crucial detail. The crucial detail that makes the whole plot work. Dark was the night as pitch, as black as coal. This whole story requires it to be so dark that you can't see. And at the window out she put her whole. And Absalom, so fortune framed the farce, put up his mouth and kissed her naked arse. And yes, arse is British for ass. Most savorously, that's such a perfect word here, before he knew this. So he's kissing her like, And back he started. Something was amiss. He knew quite well a woman has no beard, yet something rough and hairy had appeared. Yes, gross, you're right. Yes, but this... Okay, yeah, it kind of gets under your skin, doesn't it? Well, guess what? This is good writing can get under your skin. You won't forget this. Yeah, go ahead, please. Yeah. I'll take over here. What have I done? He said, can that be you? Tee! She cried and clapped the window too. Off went poor Absalom sadly through the dark. A beard, cried Nicholas the Spark. God's body, that was something like a joke. And Absalom, overhearing what he spoke, bit on his lips and nearly threw a fit in rage and thought, I'll pay you back for it. And now comes my favorite scene in this whole story. This is great. Who's busy rubbing, scraping at his lips with dust, with sand, with straw, with cloth, with chips? But Absalom, can you see this? It's like anything he can find is going, you know, I gotta get rid of the ass cooties here. He thought, I'll bring him down. I wouldn't let this go for all the town. I'll take my soul and sell it to the devil to be revenged upon him. I'll get level. Oh, God, why did I let myself be fooled? So he goes to his friend Gervais' house, and what does he get? A red hot poker, also known as a coulter. Anyone here? Anyone familiar with
it? I thought it was like that thing, because he said at the end that it got branded. I thought it was like, it's
one
like
of those
a thing and you seal it. Yeah, it's like a mark, yeah. Isn't it that?
I got
like when you mark on a. Yeah, like on a. Yeah, like
no,
a
he goes to his friend Gervais, who's a blacksmith.
Yeah, it's the thing that you can bend it.
You get it, put it in the fire and it heats up a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I know what it is.
Yeah, so this is like a red hot branding iron or poker out of the blacksmith's fire, okay? And he goes back again. 104, second paragraph from the bottom. Allison said, "There's someone at the door. Who's knocking there? I'll warrant it's a thief." "Why, no," said he, "my little flower leaf. It's your own Absalom, my sweetie thing. Look what I brought you. It's a golden ring my mother gave me as I may be saved. It's very fine and prettily engraved. I'll give it to you, darling, for a kiss." So he's getting ready to brand her butt, right? Now, Nicholas had risen for a piss. And, of course, in those days, there's no indoor plumbing. In other words, Nicholas had gotten up to use a little chamber pot. By the way, is piss a dirty word here? Remember, in this time, this was the Anglo-Saxon terms. This is what they had. And thought he could improve upon the jape. Jape means joke. And make him kiss his arse. Here he escaped. In other words, he's going to make Absalom kiss his, Nicholas's ass, before he escapes. And opening the window with a jerk, stuck out his arse, a handsome piece of work, buttocks and all as far as to the haunch. Said Absalom, all set to make a launch, "Speak, pretty bird, I know not where thou art." This Nicholas at once let fly a fart as loud as if it were a thunderclap. He was near blinded by the blast, poor chap. That's funny. But his hot iron was ready. With a thump, he smote him in the middle of the rump. Oh. Oh, I hate when that happens. Don't you hate when someone takes a red hot poker and pokes you in the middle of your butt? I know I do. Off went the skin, a hand's breadth round about where the hot coulter struck and burnt it out. Such was the pain, he thought he must be dying, and mad with agony, he started crying, "Help, water, water, help, for heaven's love." The carpenter, oh, remember him? You see how well-constructed the story is? We've almost forgotten about the carpenter. This is like 25 minutes into the sitcom when, you know, all hell breaks loose. The carpenter, startled from sleep above and hearing shouts for water and a thud, thought, "Heaven help us, here comes Noel's flood." And up he sat, and with no more ado, he took his axe and smote the ropes in two, and down went everything. He didn't stop to sell his bread and ale. Now, of course, that's an expression meaning, you know, he didn't stop for anything. He didn't stop to sell his bread and ale, but came down flop upon the floor and fainted right away. Up started Allison and Nicolay and shouted, "Help and murder in the street." The neighbors all came running up in heat and stood there staring at the wretched man. He lay there fainting, pale beneath his tan. His arm in falling had been broken double. But still he was obliged to face his trouble, for when he spoke, he was at once borne down by Nicholas and his wife. They told the town that he was mad. Of course, insane. That they'd gotten into his blood some sort of nonsense about Noel's flood. That vain imaginings and fantasy had made him buy the meeting tubs. That he had hung them in the rafters up above, and that he begged them both for heaven's love to sit up in the roof for company. All started laughing at this lunacy and streamed upstairs to gape and pry and poke and treated all his sufferings as a joke. No matter what the carpenter asserted, it went for nothing. No one was converted. With powerful oaths, they swore the fellow down, and he was held for mad by all the town. The students all ganged up with one another, saying, "The fellow's crazy, my dear brother." And everyone among them laughed and joked, and so the carpenter's wife was truly poked, as if his jealousy to justify, and Absalom has kissed her nether eye. What does nether mean? No, Nether means below. Like, there's a country that's below sea level called the Netherlands, Holland. So what is her nether eye? Her butthole, yes. And Nicholas is branded on the bum. And God bring all of us to kingdom come. Now notice what's going on at the end there. First of all, notice all those lines starting with and, telling us that we're getting to the wind-up, the big finish of the story. Also notice, we're getting the whole summary. This is a terrible story, isn't it? This poor guy is knocked unconscious, his arm's broken in two places, he's cuckolded, and then totally humiliated, everyone calling him crazy. Another guy gets his face farted in, another guy gets branded across the a-hole. I mean, all this horrible, sadistic stuff. And the miller is just, you know, he's drunk and he's just laughing it up. He's yucking it up. And then he says, oh, and God bless us all. What's that last line doing there? What is that? That last line is a benediction. I believe that was one of your vocab words. Benediction means a blessing. Benedictus, a saying that makes things good, a blessing. The opposite is a malediction. Yeah. So, you get how this works? Good, you can do all this sadistic stuff, all this dirty stuff, all this, right? And then, oh, but God bless us all, the kingdom come. And it, like, makes it okay. In a way, this sort of typifies what the whole kind of medieval Catholic, in a way, still the same thing in the Catholic Church. In a way, it's kind of cool. You can run around, do all kinds of sins. Then you go on Sunday, you do confession, you say your Hail Marys or whatever. Clean slate. And, you know, at the end of your life, the whole, you know, you confess your sins, you're absolved, you're going to heaven. What's a bummer is if you get the timing wrong. You know, if like you're fornicating, you know, someone else's wife, and you have a heart attack and die before you have a chance to go to confession again, and then you have to go and spend eternity in hell. That's kind of a bummer. So you'll see benedictions like this at the end of a lot of these stories. Okay. We're at the end here, right? Yes. Okay, so I'd like you to please... Now, remember, just quickly here, remember the Reeve was sort of upset when the miller started telling the story about a carpenter getting cuckolded? Yes. That's because, see, the word Reeve literally means like a boss, an overseer. But this particular Reeve is a carpenter. So now he's got to give the miller some payback. So now the Reeve is going to tell a story. Guess who's going to be the butt of the joke in the Reeve story? A miller, exactly. So please pick up there from 106, the Reeve's tale. And this one's a lot shorter, Reeve. It just goes to page 119.
15 pages.
Okay. And Sia and the people who still need to print out their papers, yeah, and get them to me, print them out and get them to me. Thank you. 39.